She sits out on her porch in the morning and sees me run by. I go back and talk to her and, well, she asks me about running a lot. Why I do it, what it feels like. And she has this thing about the finish line.
About the finish line? What do you mean?
I don't know exactly, but she's very philosophical about it. I think she sees it as this amazing moment. One she'll never experience. He raises an eyebrow at the wheelchair.
So, you want to get her over the finish line?
I don't know. First I thought about just taking her on my loop, but then the idea grew into maybe I could do the river run with her in November. Cairo had the team volunteer last year during cross country. We handed out cups of Gatorade and water at the mile stations, and there were wheelchair racers and lots of people running for causes. I shrug. I thought it would be the perfect run for Rosa.
That's a 10-mile run, he says quietly.
I know, but it's the only one around here. I frown. But after today, I don't think I'm going to be able to do it. I eye the wheelchair.
That's maybe 25 pounds. Rosa's small, but she's got to weigh close to 100.
I shake my head. I didn't even make it 2 miles.
But this was your first try?
When I nod, he adds,
And look at this wheelchair. It's a toy compared to some of the ones I've seen. Maybe if you had a chair with bigger wheels, one that was designed for racing?
We're standing at my walkway now. I love the serious look on his face, how he's trying to find ways to make this work.
And how long have you been running again? A month?
Not quite.
See? Like you've even had a chance to build up your own strength.
I think about this a moment. So, don't throw in the towel?
Give it a chance.
He thinks, too, then asks,
Does she know about this?
Rosa? No. I haven't told anyone. I wanted to see if it was even possible. He smiles and reaches out for my hand.
So you want to try again tomorrow? I'll meet you here at, what, 6?
Are you serious? He pulls me in closer.
Sure.
I laugh and I smile and I look into his eyes and see my little idea blooming inside him. Suddenly, I feel stronger. Like, maybe this isn't so crazy. In this moment, anything seems possible. Chapter 6. After Gavin leaves, I run inside to call Fiona, but there's a slight problem. My dad has seen everything. He doesn't say this exactly, but from the arch of his eyebrow and his position in the family room, I know he has. I face him, wondering how to explain. The boy, the wheelchair, the potting soil, there's a lot to explain. But I'm feeling really happy, and what's to hide? So I sit down and start. First with the boy. His name's Gavin Vance. He's the one who wrote that newspaper article about me. I've had a crush on him for ages. This is received with a single nod. One of cautionary approval. And then, being in a heady, sharing sort of mood, I explain the wheelchair, the potting soil, and Rosa, like it's all perfectly normal. There's no nod for this part, just a knit brow and a dubious frown. Mom enters the room and asks what's going on, and after Dad and I exchange looks, I explain everything all over again. The part about Rosa and the river run doesn't actually sink in because she's completely fixated on Gavin. So is he your boyfriend? I don't know. I give a little laugh and a shrug. But we have a date to go running with a wheelchair and potting soil tomorrow at 6.
A.M.?
She asks. I grin.
Yup.
Does that count as a date? I shrug.
Does to me.
She looks to Dad for his opinion, but Dad's been thinking about something else. The wheelchair.
I don't want to say you'll never make it 10 miles with your friend in that wheelchair, but it'll be slightly less impossible if you let me put some better wheels on it. And I'm sure she'd appreciate a more comfortable seat.
Huh?
My brain shifts from Gavin to the river run.
Really? That would be great.
He nods. Let me talk to Ed at the bike barn, get his advice. I'll be out that way on a job this morning.
I go over and hug him. You are the best.
I pull back and look at him. I don't tell you that enough, do I?
I hug him again. Tight. You are the best.
Well, he says, and he's smiling. I like the mood this Gavin fella's put you in, that's for sure. He kisses me on the temple and says, Now I better get to work.
Mom walks him out, and before she can return to cross-examine me, I've escaped to my room with my cell phone. News like this can't wait for a reasonable hour. I've got to talk to Fiona.
Chapter 7.
The last days of summer break are some of the best of my life. Gavin runs with Sherlock and me in the mornings, and then Fiona, Mario, Gavin, and I spend time together when we can, at the park, or in Old Town, or just hanging out at a coffee shop, talking and laughing about nothing and everything. Cross-country practice has already begun, and although I can't go up for the team this year because most of the race courses are over uneven terrain, dirt hills or gravel paths where my running leg's not designed to go, I run laps around the track and continue to do speed work. I race the straightaways, then jog the curves, or I sprint a 200, then jog a 200. Or if the team's doing street work, I join them for that. For most of us, cross-country is what we do to build up our base for track. Cairo unofficially requires it, unless you're doing another fall sport, and although I was never a fan of distance running before, Cairo's You're On Your Honor to Run This Weekend is what got me into running the Agouri Bridge Loop. So I've been working hard and improving at a pretty good rate. I'm up to at least 8 miles a day, 5 of them with the wheelchair, a wheelchair that my dad's made much easier to push. It now has big wheels, a padded seat, and a broader footrest, plus a serious seatbelt and handbrake for safety. He's also welded a crossbar between the handles so I can push one-handed if my arms need a break. He didn't stop there, either. He replaced the potting soil with 25-pound sandbags, got me bike gloves for my hands, which are a lifesaver, and added pouches to the sides for water bottles, which is something I've really needed in this heat. I also got a good tip from Hank. I put antiperspirant on my stump. I was sweating and getting hot spots on my leg, having to dry out my liner mid-run to keep from getting blisters. The antiperspirant has really helped. I've been avoiding Rose's house because I didn't want her to know what I was planning until I was sure I could do it. I'm still not sure that I can, not even close to sure, but my mom brought up a good point. What if her mother doesn't want you to do this? So the Saturday before school starts, I finally decide that it's time. And I jog over to Rosa's house with Sherlock and the wheelchair. Rosa sees me coming. Jessica! She calls through the screen door. It's only 10 in the morning, but it's already 80 degrees out, a good day to stay inside.
Hey, what's that?
She asks, motoring out onto the porch. Is your mom here? I ask.
Mom!
She calls over her shoulder, then turns back to my wheelchair.
Who built that? What's in that seat? Where are you going?
Rosa's mom is on the porch now, too.
Hello, Jessica. Do you want to come in? It's awfully warm out here.
No. I just need to ask you something. Rosa shakes her head.
All of us are asking questions. Who's got answers?
I smile at her.
I do. To answer yours first.
My dad retrofitted my wheelchair so I could run with it.
You run with that?
Rosa asks. I nod. And what's in the seat is one 25-pound sandbag and, I pick up the white kitchen trash liner that's next to it, 2 5-pound sacks of flour. They both look at me like I've got sunstroke. I laugh, but I'm suddenly feeling very foolish. I focus on Rosa.
You know how you asked me about running, how you talk about the finish line, how it's some mystical thing that you wish you could experience? Her eyes are growing wide. Well, I've been running with this almost every day, adding weight to it, trying to build up to...
Really?
She asks, and her eyes are enormous.
You're going to run me in that?
What are you saying?
Her mom asks, and there's definitely concern in her voice.
Well, I'm thinking Rosa and I could do the river run together. It's a 10-mile race, which is long, but it's the only community run around here. It's in November, so I have about 2 months to build up my endurance. But before I go any further with my training, I thought I should make sure it's okay with you and make sure Rosa wants to do it.
Yes, I absolutely want to!
Rosa squeals from her seat.
Yes!
Mrs. Brotzi seems very skeptical. My dad's put on big tires and a padded seat to make the ride comfortable. Plus, there's a wide seat belt and a handbrake for safety. I feel like a used car salesman, and Mrs. Brotzi is looking at me like I am one. I promise I'll be safe, I tell her.
Please, Mom?
Rosa asks. Mrs. Brotzi sighs, then looks at me.
It's you pushing, right? No one else.
I nod. She looks at her daughter, looks at me, looks at the chair.
Finally, she sighs again and says, If this is what you girls want...
Awesome!
Rosa cries. Then she looks at me with wide eyes and says,
Can we try it now?
I think about it, then give a little shrug. You probably ought to try out the chair and see how it feels. So while she powers down the porch ramp in her motorized wheelchair, I remove the sacks of flour and the sandbag from the running wheelchair. Then Rosa locks her wheels and does a transfer. She's wobbly on her legs, and they won't really support her, but the transfer is actually very smooth. Her mother fusses with the safety belt and says to Rosa,
I'm going to get you a helmet.
No!
Rosa cries.
No helmet!
Rosa says it so forcefully that Mrs. Brotzi and I are both startled.
I don't want to be the weird kid in the helmet,
Rosa says quietly.
And I want to feel the wind.
I think back. How many times have I told Rosa about facing into the wind, cutting into the wind, feeling the wind run cool fingers through your hair? More than I can count.
Believe me, I say to Mrs. Brotzi, I won't be going that fast.
She considers all this, then heaves another sigh.
Okay, then.
Thank you, Mom!
Rosa cries.
Oh, thank you.
So I push off and run Rosa around the block. One short block. Rosa's mother is waiting on the sidewalk when we return, and Rosa is ecstatic, bubbling about how much fun it is. Me? I'm pouring sweat and exhausted. I want to yank off my leg and jump in the mermaid fountain. It was only one block. One short block. Rosa and her mother have both come on board with this, but now I do seriously wonder about the sanity of it. If one block was this hard, how will I ever make 10 miles?
Chapter 8. There really is no backing out now. Gavin, Fiona, Mario, Mom, Dad, Kaylee, they all tell me everyone will understand if I decide it's too hard, but I can't quit now. I just can't. So I confide in Cairo and I ask him to help me. I need to get strong enough to do this, I tell him after school is back in session. We're in his classroom and I watch as his strong, graceful hands sort stacks of papers, clipping them into groups as he thinks. Finally, he says,
Pushing close to 100 pounds, plus the weight of the wheelchair, that would be hard for an able-bodied person.
Hey, I'm able-bodied.
He eyes me.
You know what I mean.
Then he adds, and more important, it's the weight. How much do you weigh, Jessica? 120, 130?
With or without my leg. I just shrug.
So you're pushing close to your own weight over 10 miles.
Look, I tell him, I'm going to do it. I'm asking you to help me. He holds my gaze for a long moment, then nods.
Okay.
He turns to his calendar.
What are we looking at? 8 weeks, and what are you up to?
The river run is the first weekend in November. I did 5 miles with 40 pounds this morning.
Plus the wheelchair?
I nod.
And what was your level of effort?
It was hard, I admit. He nods again.
Okay. I'll work up a schedule, and we've got to get you into the weight room and on a muscle-building diet.
He eyes me, but there's a twinkle behind the seriousness.
You thought the 400 was bad.
I laugh, but I know I'm in for it. And that's okay. It's the only way I'll get Rosa over that finish line. Chapter 9. I stick to Cairo's plan. I alternate running and lifting. I'm sore a lot. I ice my legs after hard runs. I hydrate the way he wants me to. I eat a lot of tuna. I take good care of my stump, watching for hot spots, avoiding chafing and blisters. I add another sandbag to the wheelchair. Guys in the weight room eventually accept me, eventually quit staring at my leg. I go in, work out, sweat buckets, and get out. I focus on the goal, focus on Rose's happiness, focus on the finish line. Gavin runs with me when he can, and we do our homework together almost every night. Kaylee's a freshman now and very impressed that my boyfriend is Gavin Vance.
He's like popular, she tells me one night.
I laugh. Yeah, unbelievable, huh? And then one Saturday afternoon, I'm doing a long, slow-distance run without the wheelchair when a funny thing happens. A stranger calls out my name.
Jessica!
I'm near Old Town, familiarizing myself with the river run route, and when I turn, I see a woman with her two children waving at me from across the street.
You're Jessica, she calls.
I laugh and wave. Yes, I am.
Good for you, she calls back. Congratulations.
Thank you, I shout and continue running. This buoys me through my run, and after this first time, it happens almost every time I run. People call to me from cars, wave at me from bridges, shout, "Run, Jessica!" from across the street. Somehow the word has spread throughout our little town that the one-legged girl is running again. As I run, I wonder how many of these people helped buy my leg. I wonder about the deep, wide abyss between good intentions and concrete action, and how many of them leapt across it. Is that why they're so happy to see me run? Because they helped make it happen? Or are they just happy to see the girl they read about in the paper, the one they saw peg leg around on TV running again? Either way, I find their enthusiasm to be contagious. It helps me press on, helps me add weight to the wheelchair. And when they ask why I'm pushing sandbags in a wheelchair, I'm happy to tell them about Rosa and the river run. Wish me luck, I always say, and they do. I get a lot of thumbs up. I give a lot of thumbs up back. Some weekends, Gavin joins Sherlock and me on my distance run. He's offered since the beginning to take turns pushing the wheelchair, but I made a deal with Mrs. Brotzi, and besides, this is something I want to do for Rosa. Then Fiona and Mario decide they want to join us, and as my entourage grows, so do the cheers.
Man, Mario says one Saturday after about the 10th, go Jessica! This is crazy!
But as much as I like the encouragement, something about it bothers me. And after it happens again, I tell the others, this is supposed to be about Rosa, not me.
But you're the one doing it, Fiona says.
I slow down, then stop. I'm pushing 75 pounds, and all of a sudden, I've had enough.
You okay?
Gavin asks. I shake my head. I probably spend too much time thinking about this, but In my mind, this is more than just a run for Rosa. It's a run about Rosa. You know, like a coming out party where we can say, hey, this is our friend, Rosa. Pay attention, people. She's a really great person and a math genius, too. As we walk along, I tell them about Rosa's notes and what she wrote about wishing people could see her, not her condition. I want people to see her. I want it to be a really special day for her. Gently, Gavin tells me,
but if you're our town celebrity, which it looks like you are, you're the one who will bring the attention to Rosa. You're the one who will help people see Rosa. If I pushed her, it wouldn't have the same impact as it will when you do it.
Everyone's quiet for about half a block, and then Fiona says, remember last year at the River Run when Cairo had us passing out Gatorade? There were runners who had their names on their shirts, and complete strangers would shout their names as they ran by. Maybe we can make Cheer for Rosa or Team Rosa shirts. Leave it to Fiona to come up with something brilliant. I look at her and smile. Team Rosa? I love that idea. We could do signs or flags, tall ones. She's thinking a mile a minute. We could strap them to the wheelchair and... Oh, nice, I tell her, increase my wind resistance. She ignores me and my increased wind resistance. Gavin, Mario, and I could toot horns or shake clappers or... Oh, I'm going so slow you've got the energy to toot horns? She faces me. You're pushing 100 pounds. I laugh and say, and you're willing to wear silly shirts and toot horns and carry flags for 10 miles? But what's silly, really, is my question. I'm in, she says, putting her hand out, palm down.
Me too,
Mario says, putting his hand on top of hers.
So am I, Gavin says, piling on.
I add my hand to the stack, and Sherlock seals the deal with a happy, aroo! Team Rosa is official. Chapter 10. Someone calls Channel 7. Marla Sumner calls me.
Why didn't you tell me you were doing this? She asks. This is an amazing story.
I agree to her doing a story, but I have one condition. The focus needs to be on Rosa. Still, the process leaves me very uncomfortable. Marla starts out at Rosa's house, but after the initial interview there, the news crew follows me everywhere. On a run with the wheelchair, driving to school with Fiona, in the weight room with football players, on the track with Cairo. The focus definitely does not feel like it's on Rosa. Finally, when Marla asks me, what do you think about when you run? I snap. Look, I tell her, this is not about me. I'm doing this for Rosa. And yeah, at first, I just wanted her to experience a run, to cross a finish line and hear people cheering for her because that's something she wanted. But you know what? Her biggest wish isn't to cross a finish line or have people cheer for her. It's to have people see her instead of her condition. That's all anybody with a disability wants. Don't sum up the person based on what you see or what you don't understand. Get to know them. She packs up quickly after that, and I feel a little bad for having snapped, because I know she means well. But the truth is, I'm glad she's gone. Then, Friday night when the story airs, I discover that Marla Sumner has put her own spin on things. Jessica Carlisle is back on 2 feet, and this time she's running for a cause. My mom and dad look at me, and I give them a wide-eyed shrug. She's not raising money, Marla states. She's raising awareness. I am? I ask the televised Marla. And then she launches into the story. They asked Rosa and me to mock up a tutoring session, and this is the footage Marla's voice speaks over. Rosa Brazzi was born with cerebral palsy, a condition caused by damage to the motor control centers of a developing brain. Similar to a stroke, cerebral palsy can occur during pregnancy, childbirth, or up to the age of about 3. And although there is a broad range in how CP can affect a person, in Rosa's case, her motor functions have been hindered, but her brain is as sharp as they come. The camera is on me now. She's a math genius, I say with a laugh. I would never have made it through algebra without her help.
And since one good turn deserves another, Marla's voice was saying, Jessica Carlyle wants to help Rosa do something she would never be able to do on her own. Go for a run.
When Jessica runs me, Rosa says, I feel like I'm flying.
Now there's footage of Rosa in the running wheelchair as I push her down the block. The goal, Marla's voice says, is to cross the River Run finish line this November. The shot swings around to behind us running, zeroing in on my right leg. But for a young woman with a handicap of her own, pushing 100 pounds along 10 miles is not something that can be done on a whim. Now there's a series of clips of me, running with the sandbags through Old Town, waving at the garbage collector as he calls my name, working in the weight room at school, and doing speed work on the track. All of it has Marla's commentary over it. Then she asks, So what, in a nutshell, is the cause Jessica and Rosa are running for? Quite simply, it's to have people see them, not their condition. And then there's the footage of me saying, That's all anybody with a disability wants. Don't sum up the person based on what you see or what you don't understand. Get to know them. Then they switch back to the studio where Marla and Kevin are behind the news desk. The River Run is in 2 short weeks, Marla says, looking into the camera as she winds up the story. We'll be there live, and we hope you'll join us in cheering for Rosa.
And Jessica,
Kevin adds. Marla smiles. They're quite a team. After the TV's clicked off, Mom stares at me. Dad stares at me. Kaylee, who's been texting the whole time, says, I thought you were crazy before, but I get it now. And I stare at her. Because the funny thing is, that's exactly how I feel. Chapter 11. I know where the graveyard is. I can see the taller grave markers from one of the streets on the River Run route. Sometimes, if I'm concentrating on my form or my time, I don't notice that I've run past it, but today I'm not thinking about those things. I'm thinking about Lucy. I turn off the main street and find the graveyard entrance. It's Sunday, mid-morning, and the air is still cool and crisp, but the bordering trees have left a carpet of leaves beneath them. Reds, browns, yellows. They give the grounds a warm, cozy look. I park the wheelchair beside a tree and keep Sherlock at heel as we wander among the graves. It takes me some time, but I find her. Lucy Sanders, our angel. Hi, Lucy, I begin. It's me, Jessica. But I've never spoken to a grave before. I don't know what to say. I don't know how. I'm so sorry, I choke out. But that's as far as I get before I start crying. I feel bad that she's gone. I feel overwhelmed. And I feel guilt. Guilt that I've recovered. Guilt that I'm happy. Guilt that I ever thought she was the lucky one. I can't get the words out, so I just cry. Jessica? The voice startles me. It's soft, female, and seems to be right in my ear. But it's not the ghost of Lucy. It's a woman. At first I think it's someone who's seen me on TV and I want to snap, leave me alone, can't you see I'm crying here? But then I realize that I do know her. She's more gray and frail, but I recognize her from last year's track meets. And she is carrying flowers. Mrs. Sanders? She gives me a warm smile. It's so nice of you to remember Lucy. Oh, I'll never forget Lucy, I say, and a new flood of tears comes forward. She wraps an arm around me. Aren't you sweet? Then, after I've composed myself a little, she smiles again and says, Your father has been very helpful.
He has? I ask. She nods. We would never have had the strength to pursue a settlement without him. She strokes my arm.
Your situation is more complicated, I know, but it looks like we've reached an agreement. We're thinking about setting up a scholarship fund in Lucy's name. Something like that.
Oh, I say, nodding. That would be nice.
Congratulations on your recovery, she says. I see you on the news a lot.
Thanks, I say softly. And after a few more pleasantries, I leave so she can deliver the flowers she's brought and talk to her daughter in peace. Chapter 12. School seems almost easy this year. Not having math helps, but I think that anything would feel easy compared to last year. There's no work to make up. I just have to keep up. Plus, now that I'm walking on my new leg, people really do seem to forget that there's something different about me. I'm still very aware of it, but other people treat me like I'm normal. The big exception is Meryl. I'm in two classes with her, and she always gives me the evil eye from afar. I try to ignore her, but it's a little unnerving to have someone stare at you that hard for that long. She's on her third boyfriend since Gavin, so I don't know what her problem is with me, but today she actually comes up to me.
He's only going out with you because he feels sorry for you.
She whispers as she invades my personal space on a classroom ramp.
You're like his community service project.
I'm stunned. And the truth is, her comments cut deep. I have no zinger to fire back. I just watch as she hurries away. Later, when I tell Fiona about it, she grabs me by the arm and says,
Do not, even for a second, believe that. She's just shallow and insanely jealous, not to mention cruel.
I hear her words, but Meryl's voice still echoes in my head. Finally, I break down and tell Gavin, who's sweet and comforting and assures me that there's absolutely no truth to it. Still, it's disturbing how fast weeds take root in my garden of worthiness. They're so hard to pull and grow back so easily. Chapter 13. It's Thursday, 3 days before the river run. According to Cairo's workout schedule, I'm supposed to be tapering, doing easier, shorter runs, but I'm starting to panic. I just don't feel ready. After school, Cairo sends the cross-country runners off through the back hills, so I stay on the track alone.
How are you feeling? He asks me as I'm stretching out after some warm-up laps. You ready for the big day?
No, I confess. Actually, I'm worried that I'm going to let everyone down. I can do the 10 miles, but the farthest I've pushed 100 pounds is 5, and 5 was hard.
You'll be fine, he assures me. I'm not saying it'll be easy, but race day magic will carry you through.
I shake my head. Race day magic?
You'll see, and the whole team will be out at the water stations. They'll keep you moving, get you anything you need.
I shake out my arms. I know it's from nervous energy because it's what I used to do before getting down in the blocks for a 400-meter race. I shake them out some more. In 3 days, I'll be facing over 16,000 meters. Suddenly, rigor mortis bend doesn't seem so daunting. It's as though Cairo can read my mind.
You need to unload some of that nervous energy. Why don't you take a lap?
So I start down the straightaway. I'm the only runner on the track, and after the first 100 meters, I find a rhythm. I don't push. I just glide. It's taken some time, but I've gotten used to the sound from my running foot and the way it's paired with the quieter swish of my natural foot. Whing, whoosh, whing, whoosh. The cadence of it is pleasant to me now, and this spin around the track feels easy. Heavenly. I join Cairo at our unofficial start and re-enter the real world.
Watch your arms, he says. They're crossing over.
I laugh. You are such a coach, Coach. I was just cruising. He eyes me, and it seems like he wants to say something, but he's holding back. Finally, he says,
"Well, don't forget your form. Bad habits are easy to find and hard to break."
I scoff.
"You laugh. Okay, well, give me a real one this time."
"You're serious?" I ask.
"Sure."
He draws a line in the dirt with his heel.
"Let me see some good form."
He's being silly, but he's my coach. And since the last lap around the track felt so good, I take a few minutes to fully recover, then step up to the line.
"Runners, take your mark," I announce, doing a friendly little mock of him. "Set. Pow." Whing, whoosh, whing, whoosh.
I start down the stretch, my arms pumping. "Good form, smooth form, glide, glide," I say inside my head. My breathing's easy. My rhythm's good. I push, pump, focus. Whing, whoosh, whing, whoosh. My peripheral vision vanishes. It's all tunnel vision now. Whing, whoosh, whing, whoosh. My hands open as I pump my arms. They slice the air, open a channel for me, cut me through space. Whing, whoosh, whing, whoosh. I keep in form and push toward the second curve. Whing, whoosh, whing, whoosh. I approach rigor mortis bend and push through it. My legs burn, but there's still power in them. Lots of power. Whing, whoosh, whing, whoosh. I sprint for the finish line, keeping my arms pumping straight and my legs in line, and just for show, I cross with a little lean forward. I wind down, then trot back to Cairo. "So?" I ask. "Any bad habits we need to break?" His head shakes slightly from side to side, but he's looking at me funny, and his dark skin seems pale. "You okay?" I ask.
"You're not even breathing hard," he says quietly.
I notice he's right. I've already largely recovered.
"Well," I laugh, "it's not like it was a race or anything." "Exactly," he says. "No blocks, no competition."
He produces a stopwatch from inside his windbreaker pocket. The Lucy bracelet is still around his wrist, faded and frayed, but still there.
"You clocked me?" "After that first lap, I was curious. You seemed really strong."
"I better be strong," I say with a laugh. "I've got to push 100 pounds 10 miles on Sunday."
"Well, all that training has made you really strong."
He holds the watch out toward me, demanding that I look.
"You just ran a 60.2 without even trying."
I blink at the digits.
"Wow."
His face has its color back, and there's a mischievous grin forming that quickly turns into a laugh. A deep, wonderful laugh. One I haven't heard in ages. One that means he's got plans for track season. Big plans. Chapter 14. It's race day. Or more like run day. I don't care about my time, I just want to finish. The air is perfect. Clear and crisp, but not too cold. We're all a little nervous, penned up in the holding area, but it's a good nervous. There's an awesome vibe in the air. Runners warming up, sipping coffee, chatting. It's 7 a.m, but everyone here is awake. I'm anxious to get going, but we still have 15 minutes to wait. Cairo's plan had me not run at all for 2 days, and now I'm chomping at the bit. My body needs to run. My nerves need something to do. Gavin hugs me and laughs.
"You're like a filly at the starting gate."
I whinny, which makes him laugh again. He looks into my eyes and smiles.
"This is the most amazing day ever. You know that? I can't believe you're here. I can't believe I'm here."
He moves an arm out.
"Look at all these people."
I laugh because he's definitely got race day fever. Or maybe this is what Cairo meant by race day magic. It's just exciting to be here. There don't seem to be any other teens in the holding area. Some college kids, maybe, but it's mostly adults, and some of them are gnarled and weathered seniors. Tough old birds.
I'm a palindrome, Rosa says about her 393 race number.
She looks cozy in the wheelchair, with a turtleneck under her t-shirt, mittens on her hands, and a blanket over her lap. I laugh and flash her my 369 race bib.
Yeah, and I'm a magical mathematical progression.
I've never had a race bib before, but I like it. I've also never had a timing chip strapped to my shoe, but I like it, too. They make me feel official. Best of all, though, I like our t-shirts. Cairo helped Fiona with them, and they came out great. They're white with big maroon letters that say Root for Rosa on the front and Team Rosa on the back. Rosa's is a little different. Hers says, Hello, I'm Rosa. Cairo informed us that all the cross-country helpers are wearing Team Rosa shirts today.
They'll also have energy gels for you at the water stops, he told me. Be smart, stay hydrated, and keep your fuel up.
Fiona and the others decided against carrying signs, but they did make pendant flags for the wheelchair that say, Root for Rosa and thank you. Our setup looks awesome. Plus, the boys and Rosa have clappers, and Fiona's got a horn. We definitely look like a celebration.
I'll be right back,
Mario says, handing his clapper to Fiona as he heads off to wait in a porta-potty line. Fiona shakes her head because it's his fourth trip since we arrived. He's nervous, I ask. And suddenly, I'm thinking I could use a trip to the bathroom myself. But there's a woman approaching us. She's wearing a Team Rosa shirt, but she's not a cross-country runner. She's a math teacher.
Ms. Rucker?
Fiona and I say together. She's wearing running shorts and tightly laced yellow and black sockinies and a racing bib, number 27. But it's her bare legs that are somehow shocking to see. Hi, girls, she says. I just wanted to wish you good luck.
You're a runner?
Fiona asks. Ms. Rucker gives her a little shrug. In my private life, yes.
Wow,
Fiona says. I'm noticing Ms. Rucker's watch. It's a serious runner's watch. And her shorts have little pouches built in. I can see the tops of energy gels peeking out from both sides of her hips. I wonder how she calculates her pace, with her watch or with her brain. I wonder if she thinks in numbers the whole way, if she counts her steps. But despite all the indications that she's a machine, her shirt isn't made of that fancy sweat-wicking technical fabric that would be on par with the rest of her gear. It's cotton, and more than just a little too big. Thanks for wearing the t-shirt, I tell her. She smiles, first at me, then at Rosa. It's an amazing sight. Warm and a little bit shy. Proud to wear it, she says, then moves away. Run strong, she says. I'll see you at the finish line. I watch her go. Run strong. I decide right then that that'll be my mantra for this race.
All runners to the start,
someone announces over a portable PA. 5 minutes. Gavin checks his watch and says, maybe I should hunt down Mario. We crane our necks checking the porta potty lines, and after another minute of waiting, we're getting really antsy. Everyone in the holding area is moving toward the street. Then, suddenly, there he is.
Sorry, he says. We ready?
Fiona laughs.
Yeah!
Let's go,
Gavin says, leading us toward the street.
This is so exciting, Rosa says as I roll her along.
I laugh because we're all like little wind-up toys, straining at the springs. A runner calls, Go, Rosa! As he jogs by us.
Thanks, she calls back.
Then she looks over her shoulder and says,
Go, Jessica!
We position ourselves at the back of the pack near a group of men wearing grass hats with hula skirts over their running shorts.
1 minute,
the announcer calls. My heart speeds up. I feel suddenly lightheaded. And then there's the pop of the starting gun.
It's time. Chapter 15. It's the strangest start to a race I've ever experienced. There's no shooting from the blocks, no arm pumping, no push or strain. There are hundreds of runners in front of us, and we're barely even jogging as we move forward. It takes nearly 2 minutes for us to reach the starting mat. The mat is broad and rubbery, runs the full width of the street, and makes a chirping sound as it recognizes each runner's timing chip. Chirp, 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 chirp. It's like hyperactive twittering of mechanical chicks. And then, we're off. I know from having run the course in training that the first 2 miles are slightly downhill, which makes the beginning of the run really enjoyable. People cheer for us, and Rosa waves and clacks her clappers in the air and calls, "Hi!" and "Thank you!" I see Mom and Dad and Kaylee and Sherlock at the sidelines, and Cairo's there too, cheering us on. "You're doing great," Gavin says at the 2 mile mark. He's checking his watch. 9:30 splits. I know this is way too fast, but I feel great and figure we'll slow down now that the downhill is behind us. "Splits," I snort, then grin at him. "You have become such a runner." I lean forward a bit. "How are you doing, Rosa?"
"Great. Who knew I could run this fast?" she says with a laugh.
She looks over her shoulder.
"I'm loving this. How are you?"
"Great," I call back. And it's true. I feel amazing. The course is basically U-shaped. It starts near the river outlets, then passes by retail shops and commercial properties before moving through newer residential developments, older houses, farmland, and then just fields. The halfway point is the Queensland drawbridge, which arches over the river, and then the course winds back toward the historic settlement houses and into Old Town. The finish is about half a mile past Old Town. Since I've run the route during training, I know the easiest stretch is behind us. I need to conserve. And in the back of my mind, I'm saying, slow down. There's no way you should be running 9:30s. But I don't want to slow down. I'm having a great time. The crowds are thick. People are cheering like crazy for Rosa and for me.
"There she is! There's that girl! Go, Jessica! Go, Rosa!"
Mario and Gavin flap their clappers through the air, and Fiona toots her horn. "Thank you," Rosa calls back and waves like she's in a parade, which I guess in a way she is. As we pass through the residential sections, the crowds thin out. There are only small pockets of people now. They call from their porches or stand on the sidewalks and tell runners, "You're looking good. You're doing great. Keep it up." Then the small pockets of people vanish as we run along the road through farmland. There are some cows, but they don't moo, let alone cheer. At first, it's very picturesque. The course is leveled out, the trees are lovely, and the river looks serene. But I'm very relieved to spot our mile 4 pit crew, and it worries me. Why am I this fatigued? It's Lindsay Griggs and Chandal Norwood at the water station, and Lindsay is bouncing up and down in her Team Rosa t-shirt.
"There they are! There they are!" she cries. "Looking good," Chandal says, handing me a cup of Gatorade.
"Thanks." I gulp the Gatorade and accept an energy gel.
"You're almost halfway," Lindsay says. "You're doing great."
We press on, and I squeeze the gel into my mouth a little at a time as I run. It tastes like chocolate frosting, and it revives me a little. When I'm done, Gavin takes my empty pouch from me and asks,
"You doing okay?"
I nod, but it's only half-hearted.
"What's our pace?"
10:30's at the 4 mile mark.
"You're kidding."
He shakes his head.
"No wonder. I can't keep this up. It's killing me."
He immediately drops back the pace.
"Hey,"
he calls up to Fiona and Mario.
"We gotta ease up a little."
Fiona falls in beside me.
"What's hurting?"
"I'm okay,"
I tell her. I keep my voice low so Rosa can't hear.
"I've only run this weight 5 miles before, and it took me about an hour. That's like 12s, and we're doing 10:30s.
Fiona slows down even more.
"This better?"
I nod, but it's strange. It's like the damage is done, and slowing down isn't undoing it. My breathing won't fall into a comfortable rhythm.
My hips have an unfamiliar ache to them, and my arms feel very heavy. When we reach and crest the Queensland drawbridge, I am immensely relieved.
"Halfway there," Fiona says, pepping me along.
"And a bit of downhill," I say, grateful for gravity's help with the wheelchair. The Mile 6 water stop is in the middle of nowhere, an oasis in a desert of dried grass. And what's even better than the oasis is that Annie and Giselda are working the station.
"There they are," Giselda cries. "Come and get it, you crazy people," Annie shouts. "Crazy doesn't even begin to describe it. They're nuts, wackos, a running and rolling insane asylum. Amen."
We all laugh and get our cups. I actually don't feel like drinking, but I hear Cairo's voice in my head. "Be smart, stay hydrated, and keep your fuel up." So I drink, and I take an energy gel, and I press on. 6 miles, I tell myself, only 4 to go. 1 plus 1 plus 1 plus 1. It feels a little fuzzy in my head, like I've got the wrong number of ones. Like, I'm so fatigued I can't even count to 4. 1 plus 1 plus 1 plus 1. And somewhere in my fuzzy mind, I make a connection. That's how everything is done. 1 by 1 by 1 by 1. That's how I got through losing a leg. Minute by minute by minute by minute. Hour by hour by hour by hour. Day by day, by day, by day. That's how anybody makes it through anything. So I dig in and decide that's how I'll face the miles ahead, 1 by 1 by 1 by 1. Something in that makes the pain easier to take, makes the effort easier to endure. And then, near the 7-mile mark, I realize we're passing by the cemetery. I think about seeing Lucy's mom there the other morning. I think about her making it through what had to be the hardest days of her life, how she had to take the minutes, the hours, the days, the months, 1 by 1 by 1 by 1. Suddenly, I'm grateful that the ones I'm counting off are miles. Miles I'm able to run. Miles I asked for. Miles I've worked hard to face. My ones are a distance between me and victory, not days between me and tragedy. Fiona's in step beside me, and I pant out, "Lucy," and nod up to the cemetery. "Oh," she says, and her face crinkles with sadness. "We miss you, Lucy," I call up the hill. "We miss you, Lucy," Fiona calls too. All of us glance at one another, and then together we shout, "We miss you, Lucy." The next stretch brings us back into neighborhoods. There aren't a lot of people out, but those who are loud and happy. Like the coffee has kicked in and the clapping is keeping them warm. "Go, Rosa," they shout. And then they realize that they've seen us on TV. "Hey, you're those girls. Good for you. You show 'em. Go, go, go." Mario and Gavin start up with their clappers again, and Rosa waves and giggles and shouts, "Thank you," to everyone who cheers for us and keeps me going by calling to me over her shoulder, "This is the best day of my life." With each block, the crowds get thicker. People are out on their balconies getting an aerial view. Rosa waves and clicks her clapper, but I'm slumping again, and my hips are killing me. "Mile 8. Gavin calls, pointing ahead. 2 to go, I tell myself. 1 and 1 more. I drink at the aid station, but only water. And although I try to eat the energy gel, I can't stomach it. The crowds grow noisier, but I turn inward. I feel like I've hit the rigor mortis bend of the river run. It's only 2 more miles, but it's payback time for the 2 first miles. Every step from here on is at a slight incline. People are shouting my name, Rosa's name. I see familiar faces. I see my dad, my mom, Kaylee, and her friends. How did they get there? I wave. I smile, but I don't really have the energy to do either. Sounds are murky. They're having trouble making it through the pounding from inside. I'm vaguely aware that we're passing people. Runners who are now walking. But we're being passed, too, by men in grass skirts. It's okay, I tell myself, you're doing great. Run strong, run strong, run strong. I don't even see the 9-mile marker as we go by. Gavin points it out. Only one to go, he calls. But it's like a ghost whispering in my ear. My legs are lead, my arms ache, my hips are cramping, demanding I stop, especially my left one. It's an agonizing knot of pain. And my stump? It's hot, wet, angry. Run strong, run strong, run strong. But I'm living step to step. I start counting them. I get to 50 and start over. Step by step by step by step. A young girl runs out from the crowd, touches me, and dashes away before I even know she's been there. Go, Jessica! I hear people shout. Rosa! 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 They chant. Then Fiona shouts, there it is! I know what she means. I look up, look out. There's a red and white balloon arch only 50 yards ahead. The finish line, Rosa cries. The finish line! I try to soak in the happy sounds of her voice, the ecstatic clacking of her clapper. I try to remember why I did this. Rosa! 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 Jessica! Jessica! I dig in, dig deep. The cheering helps me find a hidden reserve. The balloon arch is growing larger. The crowd, louder, larger, louder. I manage a weak wave, a smile. And then, with a chirp, 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 we've crossed over. Over the finish line. I'm aware that people are taking pictures. I'm aware that the news crew is there. I'm aware that Rosa is in seventh heaven. That random strangers are talking to her and treating her like a friend. It was great, thank you. She's telling them as a race day helper cuts the timing chip off my shoe. I'm aware that my family in Cairo are there telling me how proud they are. I'm aware that we're all making our way over to Regatta Park where the breakfast celebration is being held. It's all sort of fuzzy in my head because I'm shaky and exhausted. But I'm also aware that I'm very, very happy. I'm surrounded by friends, by family, by my teammates and coach, and by warm, supportive strangers. They've all helped me in some way get over that finish line. But as we gather in Regatta Park and help ourselves to scrambled eggs, orange juice, and bagels, I realize something. This wasn't a finish line for me. 8 months ago, it was a Herculean effort to walk myself and my IV scan to the bathroom. Today, I ran my friend 10 miles across her first finish line. 8 months ago, I couldn't do anything. This race has made me believe that there's nothing I can't do. This is my new starting line. This is Laura Flanagan. We hope you've enjoyed this unabridged production of The Running Dream by Wendelin Vendranen. This program was produced by Dan Musselman and directed by Francesca Amari. Text copyright 2011 by Wendelin Vendranen Parsons. Production copyright 2011 Random House, Inc. All rights reserved.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.